On August 6, 2004, six people went to sleep in their house on Telford Lane in Deltona, Florida. They had no idea they would fall victim to a murderous plot by a man motivated by anger and revenge. This is the story of the Deltona Massacre, also known as the Xbox Murders. Hi everyone, I'm your host Miko, and welcome to episode 67 of True Crime Timeline. Now before we begin, I have a couple of very special shout-outs. The first one goes to Meredith from Chattanooga, Tennessee. Now you might recognize her name because I had previously mentioned that Meredith had left the nicest Facebook post. But recently, she also signed up for True Crime Timeline's Patreon program. Meredith, your support of the program means so much to me. And I picked today's case because I remember that you'd commented about wanting to hear an episode about the Deltona Massacre. So this episode is for you. The second special shout out goes to Nicole from Greensboro, North Carolina. And if Nicole's name also sounds familiar, it's because she previously left a show review on Apple Podcasts. Well, she's also gone above and beyond and signed up for Patreon too. Again, thank you so much for supporting the show. In fact, I'd like to thank you, your husband, Ella, Evan, and especially Patty for your support. Oh, and Ella and Evan need to promise that they won't actually listen to the episodes until they get a lot older. So if you're a new listener and you want access to the older episodes, please check out patreon.com/truecrimetimeline. For $3 a month, you can access the old episodes and also have my unending gratitude for helping to keep the show going. So with that, let's begin. It was August 6, 2004, when a painter named Chris headed off to work. Around 7 a.m., he arrived at a house located at 3106 Telford Lane in Deltona, Florida. He was supposed to give two guys who were staying there a ride to the job site. His girlfriend, who worked at Burger King, also had coworkers that lived there, and they hadn't shown up for work, so she asked Chris to tell them to hurry up and get to work. Chris walked up to the door and noticed that something was immediately wrong. The front door appeared to have been kicked in. He rang the doorbell, but no one answered. There was music playing really loud, so maybe there'd been a party the night before, but that still wouldn't explain why the door was kicked in. He then peered inside the house and saw people on the ground. Not sure if they were passed out or dead, he started yelling to them, but the people didn't respond. He then ventured inside the house and peered into a bedroom and saw that a bed had been flipped up on its side, and there was blood. At that point, he had enough. He left the house and immediately called 911 on his cell phone.
911, where's the emergency?
Is that 3106? Telford?
That's in Deltona?
Yeah.
What's the problem?
I think it's a murder.
When Volusia County Sheriff's deputies arrived, they found a house of horrors. Nothing could have prepared them for what they were about to find in that home. There was no question that a crime had taken place. Blood was on the walls and floors, and there were bodies everywhere. They found 17-year-old Jonathan Gleason dead in a recliner. He had been stabbed in his face, neck, chest, and stomach. His head was also crushed. Jonathan had defensive wounds, indicating that he had tried to fight off his attacker. Close to Jonathan, on the floor, was 34-year-old Anthony Vega. the attacker had beaten Anthony in the face. Anthony's girlfriend, 19-year-old Michelle Ann Nathan, was found in a bedroom. Her throat had been slit multiple times and she had been stabbed behind her ear and in her right breast and hip. 28-year-old Roberto Gonzalez, also known as Tito, was found in another bedroom. The attacker had stabbed him 15 times in the chest and 10 times in the stomach. Even with those injuries, Tito fought back, but ultimately died when the attacker beat him in the head. Officers found two more bodies in the master bedroom. 30-year-old Francisco Ayo Roman, or Flaco, was found next to the flipped mattress. The attacker had cut his throat and struck him on the head. He had been hit so hard that his teeth had been knocked out. Flaco's 22-year-old girlfriend, Erin Belanger, was also found. She had been cut and beaten. The attacker had gone even further with her by sexually assaulting her with the bat after she was already dead. The attacker didn't stop with killing all of the people in the house, but also killed Erin's dog. Her dachshund, George, was found stomped to death next to her lifeless body. Officers also noted that the front door had been kicked in with such force that the attacker broke the deadbolt lock and left a footwear impression on the door. Footwear impressions were also found on a bedsheet, pay stub, and two playing cards. A knife handle and bloody knife blade were also recovered as evidence. But who would commit this especially atrocious crime? And a bigger question was, why? To answer both these questions, we need to go back in time to before the murders. In the evening of Friday, July 30th, 2004, Erin Belanger contacted police. She told them that there was suspicious activity occurring at her grandmother's vacant home in Deltona, located on Providence Boulevard. She had found personal belongings inside her grandmother's home and had boxed and removed the items, which included clothes, papers, CDs, an Xbox, and allegedly 10 grams of cocaine. She was right to think that something was going on, because Troy Victorino and Jerome Hunter had moved into the house and were squatting. Unbeknownst to Erin, earlier that day, Victorino had been arrested for felony battery for punching a 20-year-old man in the face. On Saturday, July 31st, Victorino posted bail and was released. Also that day, Erin called the police again. She told officers that several items were missing from her grandmother's house, like a TV set and other valuables. Later that night, Victorino showed up at Erin's home on Telford Lane and confronted her. He accused her of taking some of his belongings that he had left in the house on Providence Boulevard, and he wanted those belongings back. A little after leaving Erin's home, early Sunday morning on August 1st, Victorino contacted the police and reported that someone had stolen his belongings from the house on Providence Boulevard. Officers asked him for a list of the stolen property. This enraged Victorino, and instead, he told the police that he'd handle it himself. And he meant it, because later he met up with Brandon Graham, Robert Cannon, and Michael Salas. Victorino got into Cannon's Ford Expedition and told everyone in the car that Erin and the other people that lived at that house had stolen his stuff from the Providence Boulevard house. The car not only had Cannon, Graham, and Salas in it, but also Hunter and a few women. Victorino insisted that they all go to Erin's home to fight with them. When they arrived there, the women went up to the house armed with knives and rang the doorbell. The other men stood outside the house holding baseball bats, and Hunter started yelling that the people inside the house needed to come out and fight. Victorino, however, stayed inside the car the whole time. He had recently been released from jail and didn't want to risk getting in trouble. It wasn't until Francisco, who was inside the house, started screaming for the police that the group took off. Aaron, who had been hiding in the bedroom, had also called 911. While taking off before the police arrived, Victorino's group slashed the tires in two cars that were in the driveway. Although that was a lot of property damage, this wasn't enough for Victorino. He wanted them dead. On the morning of August 4th, Victorino's group went to a Walmart and bought baseball bats. Later that day, Victorino, Hunter, Salas, Cannon, and Graham went to a park to engage in another fight. Now, some of the people in the group that they were supposed to fight with were affiliated with the people who lived at Aaron's house. As a result, the other group were a no-show at the park. After leaving the park, though, Victorino spotted the car that had the group that they were supposed to fight and told Cannon, who was driving, to chase after their car. While doing so, Victorino fired a gunshot at the car. The next morning, August 5th, Graham, Sales, and Cannon met with Victorino and Hunter. Victorino had come up with the plan to get his stuff back from Aaron based on a movie named Wonderland, where a group carrying lead pipes ran into a home and beat the occupants to death. He asked the group if they were in, and they all agreed. Victorino then proceeded to describe the layout of the home to the group. He also told them that he especially wanted to kill Flacco. Graham would later describe Victorino as calm and cool-headed as he outlined his plan. When Hunter asked if they should wear masks to disguise what they look like, Victorino had calmly responded, no, because they weren't going to leave any evidence. They were going to kill them all. During the day, the group continued to refine their plan. Graham was dropped off at a friend's house, and from that point, he avoided any further contact with the rest of the group. He didn't want any part of these murders that were being planned. The next morning on August 6, 2004, Chris came to the house and subsequently called 911 after seeing the bodies on the floor. On August 7th, the day after the murders, Victorino was arrested on a probation violation. Hunter was also brought in and wound up describing his role in the murders. As a result, Cannon's car was seized, and inside, officers recovered a pair of sunglasses containing Francisco's fingerprint. They also found glass fragments in the car that were consistent with glass from a broken lamp at Aaron's house. Salas was brought in and admitted to being at the crime scene. He said that Cannon drove them to Aaron's house and also told officers that the bats had been discarded at a retention pond. Using that information, officers retrieved two bats from the pond and two bats from the surrounding trees. The bats found in the trees had DNA linked to four of the victims. On July 5th, 2006, Victorino, Hunter, and Salas went to trial. Cannon, who had previously pleaded guilty to the murders in exchange for his testimony, was sentenced to life in prison without parole. The prosecution would argue that Victorino was a career criminal who was motivated by rage and revenge. He had planned these murders because he felt he'd been disrespected and had then recruited others to help him carry out his murderous plan. Prosecutors told jurors that the killers snuck around the house looking through the windows before kicking down the front door. Once inside, they executed Aaron, Jonathan, Tito, Michelle, Flacco, and Anthony with no mercy or remorse. Horrific crime scene photos were shown to the jury, and also a video showing the crime scene before the bodies were removed. Members of some of the victims' families left the courtroom, not wanting to see what happened to their loved ones. Jurors were horrified to hear how the victims had been beaten to death with baseball bats and also sustained cuts to their throats, most of which were inflicted post-mortem. They also heard how Belanger had post-mortem injuries that were consistent with being sexually assaulted with a baseball bat. The medical examiner explained that almost all of the victims had tried to fight back, evidenced by the presence of defensive wounds. Cannon, who was supposed to be a star witness for the state, changed his mind about testifying and became a hostile witness. Now remember, he had pleaded guilty and accepted a life sentence in exchange for his testimony. However, he later alleged that he was in fact innocent and had been coerced into entering a guilty plea by his former attorneys. He alleged that they had told him that if he went to trial, that he would for sure get the death penalty. Cannon said that he would be willing to testify again if he was given a better deal, but his new offer was turned down. On the stand, Cannon refused to say much more than he was not guilty. But every so often, he would answer questions. He admitted to driving all of them to Aaron's house. He also testified that he, Victorino, Hunter, and Salas entered Aaron's home armed with baseball bats. He also said that he and Salas only went along with Victorino's plan because they were afraid that he would kill them if they didn't. Graham was also called to the stand, and if you remember, he was the guy that backed out of the plan that night. He testified that he was present when Victorino had planned the murders, basing it on the movie Wonderland. And remember the footwear impressions that were found on the front door that had been kicked in? Those impressions were linked to Victorino's size 12 Lugs boots that were seized 3 days after the murder. Prints from these shoes were also found on a playing card, pay stub, and sheet. Even more incriminating, the state pointed out that the DNA testing linked bloodstains on the boots to Aaron, Flacco, and Anthony. There was also video surveillance from a convenience store on August the 5th showing Victorino wearing similar boots that evening. In regards to the boots, the defense argued that someone other than Victorino could have kicked in the door if this other person had been wearing shoes with similar treading. A Nike shoe was also seized, which had blood from Michelle, Tito, and Anthony on it. Investigators believe that this shoe belonged to Hunter, but this couldn't be proven since there was more than one DNA source on the shoe. In fact, Victorino's DNA was also found on the Nike, meaning that it was possible that more than one person had worn these shoes. Blood from Aaron, Tito, and Flacco were also found on two bats that were recovered near a retention pond, and a hair found on one of the bats belonged to Michelle. Victorino took the stand in his own defense. He testified that he had not committed the murders. Instead, he said that he had been at a nightclub called Papa Joe's that night. Two of his friends took the stand and tried to corroborate his alibi. The prosecution challenged one of the witnesses, stating that she had a romantic interest in Victorino, and they used a recorded call between the two as proof. Victorino also asserted that because the boots had both his DNA and someone else's DNA, that proved that this someone else who wore his boots was the person who committed the murders. However, an inmate in the Seminole County Jail said that he had conversations where Victorino admitted to the murders because he didn't like how Aaron and her friends had disrespected him. Hunter and Salas also testified in their defense. They corroborated the other evidence and testimony at the trial, including the evidence where Victorino had planned the murders and asked them to participate. They also said that Victorino had tried to create an alibi by making an appearance at the nightclub. Hunter testified that Victorino had kicked in the door, hit Jonathan on the head, fought with Anthony, and that after initially exiting the house, had re-entered with a switchblade knife. Salas told the jury that he saw only Victorino standing over Francisco and Aaron, who were not moving. Salas said that as he was leaving the room, Victorino, while holding Aaron's foot in one hand and a bat in the other, said, "Watch what I do to this bitch." Throughout the trial, jurors heard the tragic details of each victim's death, with the defendants blaming each other for the actual killings. Hunter and Salas admitted to hitting people, but said that they didn't kill anyone. On Tuesday, July 25th, 2006, Victorino was convicted of 6 counts of first-degree murder, 1 count of abuse of a dead human body, 1 count of armed burglary of a dwelling, 1 count of conspiracy to commit aggravated battery, murder, armed burglary of a dwelling, tampering with physical evidence, and 1 count of cruelty to an animal. He was sentenced to death for the murder of Aaron Belanger and Francisco Io Roman by a vote of 10 to 2, Jonathan Gleason by a vote of 7 to 5, and Roberto Gonzalez by a vote of 9 to 3. He was also sentenced to 2 life sentences for the murders of Michelle Nathan and Anthony Vega. He was also sentenced to 10 years for conspiracy to commit aggravated battery, murder, armed burglary, and tampering with evidence, 30 years for the abuse of a dead human body with a weapon, life for the armed burglary of a dwelling, and 10 years for cruelty to an animal. Hunter and Salas were also convicted of 6 first-degree murders. Hunter received 4 death sentences and 2 life sentences without parole. Salas received life sentences. In 2009, Victorino appealed his conviction and death sentence for first-degree murder. Both the convictions and sentences were affirmed. In 2013, he petitioned the court for a writ of habeas corpus. The court affirmed the post-convictions court denial for his motion for post-conviction relief and denied his petition for a writ of habeas corpus. In 2016, Victorino and Hunter's death sentences were vacated because the jurors didn't have a unanimous decision when they recommended the death penalty. Before 2016, Florida law only required 7 or more jurors to vote for the death penalty. But now, jurors would again have to decide what sentence Victorino and Hunter should get. Luckily, the Florida Supreme Court later reversed the 2016 decision, saying that unanimous jury recommendation for the death penalty is not required. Victorino was fighting to have his death sentences reduced to life sentences. However, the Florida Supreme Court denied that he was entitled to have his sentencing reduced. Aaron Belanger and Francisco Io Roman, or Flaco, had been dating. And their love had been memorialized with 2 river stones that were engraved with their names. The 2 stones were laid next to each other in a dry stream bed in downtown Boston called the Garden of Peace. Roberto, or Tito Gonzalez, left New York for Florida to improve his life. He was saving up money in order to move his daughter to Florida with him. Michelle Ann Nathan was well-liked. She was known for being bubbly, silly, and a little crazy in a good way. She and Anthony Vega were dating and were hoping to get married. Anthony loved listening to old school rap and watching movies. He was funny and liked telling jokes. Jonathan Gleason was creative. He could sing, dance, and write music, and dreamed of someday becoming an actor. You will never be forgotten, Aaron Belanger, Francisco Io Roman, Roberto Gonzalez, Michelle Ann Nathan, Anthony Vega, and Jonathan Gleason. So that's a wrap. Thank you so much for listening. Check out the True Crime Timeline Instagram page and Facebook group for pictures about the episode. I'd also like to thank and acknowledge the many sources that were used for this episode. This podcast would not be possible without the hard work from these sources. If you'd like a list of the sources, want to request a case, or just say hello, leave a message at truecrimetimeline.com. So with that, take care and stay safe, everyone.